to the ESIMS Global Economy Podcast. My name is Frederick Eriksson, and today I'm talking to Anu Bradford. Anu is a professor of law and international organization at the Columbia Law School, where she also directs the European Legal Studies Center. Her research focuses on European Union law, international trade law, and antitrust law. Anu is also the author of a brand new book called The Brussels Effect: How the European Union Rules the World. In that book, she explores a concept, the Brussels Effect, that she has researched and discussed for several years, and that lately has become a frequent topic in Brussels, Beijing, Washington DC, and other capitals of the world. Anu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
So I want to start with a very, very basic question, which is, what is the Brussels Effect?
Great. I think that is exactly how we should start. Brussels effect refers to the European Union's ability to unilaterally regulate the global markets. The EU is a large and affluent consumer market, and few global companies can afford not to trade within the EU. So these companies abide by EU rules as the price for doing business in the EU. But often these companies find it in their interest to apply the EU rule globally across their conduct and operations, as opposed to maintaining multiple compliance regimes. So what the EU does is EU needs to regulate the single market. It is the global companies that then export and globalize those EU rules.
We're not talking here then about the EU introducing its regulations and then other governments around the world following EU regulations. Here we're talking about companies that may be exposed or confronted with different regulations across the world, but they choose to follow the EU regulation across the world, in a sense that not only the products when they sell to Europe, but also when they sell in America or when they sell in China or Latin America. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So what is interesting about the Brussels effect, it is not the EU coercing countries, the foreign governments, to do something. It doesn't require the EU to elicit cooperation by foreign governments. It is really a phenomena where the markets do the work. The EU sets the regulations for the European market, and it's the global companies whose business strategies compel these companies to apply the EU rules globally. So it is really EU regulation globalized through market forces as opposed to through political decisions making, where we would see the foreign governments necessarily respond by adjusting their rules.
So it's a market-based transmission mechanism that we can talk about here. So is it a new thing, or is it something which has existed for quite some time?
So the EU has been doing it for quite some time, but it has mainly been under the radar. So we have not talked about the Brussels effect or the EU's external regulatory influence for that long. But if I needed to trace the beginning of this, I would say that since about 1990s, when there was a concerted effort to build a single European market, that is when the EU started to take very ambitious approach to regulation. When we were pushing through the regulation, integration through regulation. That is when this regulatory architecture in the EU was built. And since then, gradually, these regulations have expanded, and also their global effect has expanded as the market opportunities in Europe have grown and many more companies have found the EU to be an exciting place to do business. But some manifestations of the Brussels effect go back further than the others. There are new examples like the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR, or the EU's regulation of, for instance, hate speech online. Those are more recent regulatory innovations whereby the salience of the Brussels effect is something that we have witnessed over the past couple of years in a more dominant form.
And would you say, is it also possible to talk about sort of a Beijing effect or a Washington DC effect, that they also have regulations that operate in the same manner as the Brussels effect, or is this something which is unique to Europe?
So currently, I would say this is unique to Europe. There's nothing that would suggest that we could not see Beijing effect one day, or that we could not see the Washington effect today. China is a large market. The United States is a large market. The US would have the regulatory institutions, the capacity to set the rules for the world. What distinguishes Washington from Brussels is that the United States has been unwilling to set those rules at the high level and hence has chosen not to be the global regulator. What is different about Beijing, today still China does not have the kind of regulatory capacity. It's not enough that you have a large market. You also need to have the institutions, the regulatory frameworks that allow you to unleash the power of the markets and convert them into tangible regulatory influence.
So why Europe? Why did Europe develop this ability to effectively become sort of a global regulator through market mechanisms, but not Washington, D.C. or any other capital that may represent a larger market than Europe? Yeah.
So Europe has been for a long time very comfortable with regulation. There is more skepticism of the market's ability to self-correct, and there's been more faith in the government's ability to improve outcomes by intervening. So this balance between the government and the markets have led the Europeans to adopt more regulations than many other markets, including the United States. But I think there's something that is very peculiar about Europe that also explains the extent to which these regulations emanate from Brussels. And that is that every time the EU regulates, it is pursuing for a dual goal. So for instance, when there is an environmental regulation, that regulation serves the goal of preserving the environment, but it also advances the European single market project. So regulation has been a tool for integration and a tool for liberalizing trade within the European market. So it has been easier to build the political consensus behind those regulations when there are different gains for different parties. The economic benefit of more opportunities in the single market for trading, and also then these social policy benefits, including environmental benefits, consumer protection, the data protection. And I think this dual goal has really helped the EU to push through more regulations than many other jurisdictions could have.
And how are other governments responding to this effect? I mean, I would assume if you are sitting in Beijing and you want to regulate the behavior of the companies in your jurisdiction yourself, and you may be confronted with companies that choose to follow an EU regulation. Are they unhappy with the state of affairs, or are they basically working along with the EU and EU rules in order to basically get the market to work as smooth as possible?
So interestingly, I would say that the response by foreign governments has been twofold. There's been some governments who are upset to see that their preferences are being overridden by a foreign regulator, making them obsolete in the process. And there are concerns that the EU is this regulatory imperialist that is compromising the political autonomy and democratic structures of foreign countries. But at the same time, we have many foreign governments that have welcomed the Brussels effect. In many instances, the EU supplies the kind of regulatory capacity that provides public goods that these governments do not have the capacity to produce. So if EU goes after global cartels through its competition law enforcement and dismantles these cartels, there are enormous benefits for consumers across the markets, even in the countries where the competition regulators would not have the capacity to dismantle these cartels themselves. There are also many governments who find that they may not have the sophisticated regime to regulate the chemicals or global food safety chains, but they are happy to see the EU to step in and produce regulations that also extend some of the protections to their consumers. So in many ways, I don't think there is a simple answer that the foreign governments always would win or would lose from the Brussels effect. But interestingly, what we see many governments to do is that not only they see their companies obey the EU rules, but they start following the EU in their own regulation. So we see, for instance, about 120 countries around the world today have a data privacy regulation, and most of those have been drafted to resemble the GDPR. Why is that? First of all, if their own corporations already, because of the Brussels effect, comply with EU rules, these companies start advocating GDPR type of rules at home. So Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, for instance, call for Washington to adopt a GDPR type of regulation in the United States. So we see these companies not only change their behavior, but start advocating the EU-style regulations in their home markets.
All right, so we have now pinned down one factor behind it, which is basically the institutional capacity of Europe to regulate, which basically provides a global public good and help countries as well as companies to basically standardize their behavior. What about relative economic size? And I'm thinking here, of course, that we are seeing shifts in relative economic size in the world now with an ascending China, India, and other parts of the world, at the same time as Europe's share of the world economy is going down in a similar fashion, or in somewhat similar fashion as America's share of the world economy is going down. Do you think that will lead to less capacity of EU rules to have this sort of effect on how multinationals behave in the world, or will sort of that institutional factor remain strong enough in order for Europe to basically set the rules of the global economy in the future as well?
That is indeed a critical question, because the Brussels effect relies on there being large enough of a market that it is an unavoidable trading partner, which means the companies find it too costly to divert their trade elsewhere and abandon the European market if they don't like the regulations. If Europe loses that attractiveness because of the size of the market, the Brussels effect is unlikely to materialize. What the book suggests, though, is that the EU's relative regulatory influence will outlive its relative economic size, and that we are unlikely to see Beijing effect replace the Brussels effect anytime soon. So first, if you think about the growth of Chinese GDP, it is impressive, and it is going to overtake the size of the EU in pretty much all the metrics, measuring the strength of the economy. But it will take a while before the GDP per capita in China catches up with the EU. And GDP per capita is a much better predictor of the country's willingness to regulate. Chinese consumers are not as wealthy as to support the level of regulation that the European consumers support. And by the time that GDP per capita will catch up in China, most likely the overall GDP growth has slown to the extent that the Chinese government may be less willing to risk the further slowing of that growth through very interventionist regulation. China is also very reliant on export-driven growth. It's the import jurisdictions that set the standards. And to the extent China is building regulatory capacity today, it is actually importing a lot of the European rules. It's antitrust rules, that's the term we use in the United States. It's competition rules, are modeled after the European Union. It is importing many of the environmental regulations from the EU, same with some of the food safety. So what we may see one day is an emerging Beijing effect, but where the China would be then exporting the rules that were initially imported to China through the Brussels effect.
Can you think about examples where the effect hasn't worked perhaps as it was intentioned? I mean, now when we're talking, I'm thinking about sort of one example where you may see it's backfired or not, but I'm thinking about GMOs and different sort of food safety and that type of regulations, where Europe introduced a rule and then we saw a lot of companies in Europe basically packing up to move to other parts of the world because they couldn't continue to develop their products here. So are there other like that example as well, sort of where the EU regulation doesn't have that transmissive effect sort of across the world, where the other countries tend to set the norm for how companies behave there?
So Brussels effect certainly has its limits, and I think the contribution of the book is to show where Brussels effect takes place and where it fails to do so. So there are many areas where, for instance, the Brussels effect doesn't really reach the financial regulation. Capital is elastic. If the EU regulates capital with too high of standards, capital can flee. It can move to other jurisdictions. You can list your companies in New York, in Hong Kong. There's nothing that compels you to opt into the European regulatory regime. But generally, the Brussels effect applies when we talk about consumer goods, when we talk about the environment. Those don't move. By deciding to process the consumer data outside of the EU doesn't allow Google, for instance, to escape the EU regulations, because we still talk about consumers that are physically Europeans and in Europe. So there are examples of inelastic regulation that is part of the Brussels effect, but also elastic, the targets of regulation like capital, which are outside of the scope of the Brussels effect. But there are also other areas. You mentioned food safety. So a key to the Brussels effect is that a global company decides that it is in that company's interest to standardize operations across the different markets, as opposed to customizing for different markets in which the company operates. And sometimes the cost of customizing are not that high, and the benefits of doing so are high enough to justify producing different varieties. And food safety is an area. Consumer preferences in food vary across the regions. And for instance, GMOs is an area where Europeans are quite concerned, but that concern is not shared around the world. But the EU has been quite effective in changing the practices of food manufacturers when it comes to GMOs in many areas. But there are other areas of food and examples of, if I think, for instance, the candy called Smarties, there are two different varieties. The colors of Smarties pop in the United States. There are a lot of artificial colorants in those Smarties, but those colorants are prohibited in the EU because studies show that they cause ADHD in children. So they are replaced with natural ingredients in the EU. And the company producing the candy has decided that it is worth their while to run two production lines. The US market is big enough to justify serving those different consumer preferences. So that's just one example where we, for instance, do not see the Brussels effect.
All right, very good. So a final question before you have to leave, Anu. We are recording this podcast that same day as the UK has released its negotiation mandates for the EU-UK trade negotiations. And earlier this week, we had the European mandate for the negotiations. The Brussels effect and sort of the concept that you launched a couple of years ago has been often referred to in the Brexit discussion. We have, on the one hand, a government in the UK that makes the point that it wants to distinguish itself from the EU when it leaves the EU. So it doesn't want to sign up to different type of provisions that may tie the UK to EU rules in the future. At the same time, we're talking about a company with lots of different multinationals that trade on both sides, and they are basically going to follow the same rules and the same standards anyway. So how do you sort of evaluate this whole debate around exclusion or non-exclusion when it comes to the UK, when it now negotiates about the terms of the trade in future? Will it actually make sense for them to be very different from the EU? Or if they go down that route, won't their companies basically adopt the same standards as the EU anyway?
So here the book articulates very clearly how the Brussels effect undermines Brexit and shows how the UK government's promise to deliver this regulatory sovereignty to the UK is actually a false promise that is very difficult to realize in practice. The UK companies are very dependent on the opportunities to trade in the European market. EU is about 45% of the UK companies' export share. These companies need to continue to access the European market long after Brexit. And in order to do so, they need to comply with EU rules. So what the Brussels effect suggests is that it is unlikely to be in the interest of these companies to produce a different variety of products for the UK market or third export markets. Instead, the companies continue to produce to the EU standard, and the scale economies and other benefits of uniform production suggest that they are going to apply this standard across their production. So what we see is political alignment that is a result of the market forces and business incentives of the UK companies. It removes the real political choice from the government to say that we are going to have regulatory divergence, we are going to have regulatory sovereignty, because that is just not how the markets work in the 21st century and how the UK companies will operate. What happens, though, and what is a shift from the previous era, is that after Brexit, what has changed is that the UK companies no longer are able to influence those regulatory rules through their government, who no longer sits at the table. The UK has chosen to become a rule taker as opposed to rule maker in potentially a lot more regulated economy, because those regulations no longer incorporate the more pro-market preferences of the United Kingdom government.
All right. Thank you very much, Anu. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the podcast. Congratulations to the book, and hope you are going to sell a lot of copies. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.